Topic: Ben Jonson's contribution to English comedy. Introduction. Ben Jonson's importance in the history of English drama is mainly due to his envisagement of a new kind of comedy, of which he gave excellent example. He was a vigorous crusader for good sense and rectitude. From the very beginning of his dramatic career, the closing year of the 16th century, he undertook what he thought the reform of Elizabethan drama, and particularly comedy. He appeared at a time when the university wits such as Marlowe, Lilly, Green, Kit, and Nasse were establishing upon the stage what is called romantic drama. To those like Ben Jonson who had any respect for classical drama and its canons, are also modernization, sanity, and the moral and intellectual well-being of men. The romantic comedy and histories offered much that was abominably absurd and lawless. He was critical and romantic extravagance and the religious lack of realism, as well as the genre ignorance or defiance or the classical rules sanctified by the theories and practice of the ancient Greek and Romans. Frequent change of place, long duration of the time represented absence of an unified plan or coherent structure, mingling of farce and tragedies of clowns and kings, lack of definite aesthetic and ethical aim, and in a sort an easy disregard of precision and discipline appeared to Jonson an defensible error. The theme treats were as objectionable as the treatment. The romantic play told simply impossible stories and did not imitate life or nature. They dealt with idealized heroes for flung places, unbelievable adventures and vicissitudes, vicissitudes, and flamboyant, flamboyant situations. The drama before Ben Jonson was romantic in so far as, the first, it did not adhere to the theory and the practice of the ancients, and second, it did not attempt a representation of actuality. Ben Jonson's reformation of the drama meant, in fact, his correction of these twin romantic tendencies. He tried to establish indeed a comic form and a tragic form based on the classical practice and to bring drama nearer life. In the field of tragedies, he had no tangible. He tried to establish instead a comic form of tragic form based on the classical practice and to bring drama nearer life. In the field of tragedy, he had no tangible success. He wrote only two tragedies, but in that of comedy, he succeeded in making himself the greatest figure of his age. Jonson's classicism. We will consider Jonson's achievement and contribution in the field of comedy with respect to his following three tendencies. The first, classicism, second, realism, and third, moralism. They are not so well defined as capable for being accurately differentiated from one another. But they are all in fundamental position to romanticism. Ben Jonson had great deference for the classical antiquity, and he often referred to the great Greek and Roman dramatist with unqualified adoration. In spite of the fact that he could not sort a university degree, unlike university wits, he was well read in the classics. His protest against romantic drama, says Thorncutt, was similar in its. His protest against romantic drama, says Thorncutt, was similar in its essential to Matthew Arnold's protest against the romantic school of poetry. He wanted observed this critic that the drama should rest on right appreciation of the classics and a rationalized study of the present. Johnson wished to take the drama as far as possible to the purposes and the methods of Greek and Romans. For this purpose, it was required of him to obey certain set rules which critics had derived from the classical practice. These rules were, first, A. The so-called three unities, those of place, time, and action. The first requires the scenes of the play of to be restricted to the same town. The second requires the action of the play not to be extended over a period of more than 24 hours. The third required the play of play to represent one single and well-constructed plot without a structurally superfluous episode, some plot by plots. B. The law of decorum, which requires B1, the separation of specific tragedies and comedies are to be set apart and not allowed to mingle with each other. B2, a certain propriety of characterization should not be capricious and confused, but should be based on an accurate analysis of life. Every character should be a representative as well as an individual. Any king, for example, should represent king in general. A jealous husband should exhibit the typical trait of jealousy, and neither person should lapse into mere individual whimsy. Only by adherence to such sane principle, Ben Jonson believed, could the flagrant and dangerous departure from artistic standard and classical discipline be arrested. Ben Jonson's classicism earns for him the remark of David Dacey that, in inverted commas, he is the one great example in English of Renaissance humanist, in the narrowest sense of that term, turned a dramatist and poet. But it must be pointed out that Ben Jonson was not a slavish imitator of the classical dramatists. He treated them more as guides than as masters. He was less rigid in practice than in theory. And even in theory, he admitted the need of some place for digression and art. He does not, for example, always observe the unities in the prologue of his greatest comedy, Walfon. He claimed about himself the law of time, blame, person, he observed. From no needful rule, he served. But in practice, he did swerve from many needful rules which he tenaciously, tenaciously, championed in theory. In the very play just mentioned, the strict unity of action in Violet by the admittance of subplot in Bartholomew Fair again, the action of episodic rather than architectonically perfect. In Every Man Out of His Humor, the characters sleep one night in the country and return to the town of next morning, thus violating the unity of time. In the tragedy Catiline, the hero files to join his army in Tuscany, thus violating the unity of place. This instance show that Jonson did not allow the classical rule to straitjacket his artistic liberty or to arm twist his native tendencies. What he fell foul of was he ready license to go to imperable length in these matters. Jonson's realism. Ben Jonson's chief contribution to English comedy lies in his effort to bring it much nearer reality. He was a champion of all-round realism and was quick to dissociate himself from the romantic extravagance, grotesqueries, and, in a word, a wanton disregard of varnished actuality. In his very first play, Every Man in His Humor, he was decisively articulated about the intention of his kind of comedy. he proposed as theme and vehicle of his comedy. Deeds and language such as man do use, and person such as comedy would choose. Events he would sue an image of the time, a spart with human follies, not with crimes. He felt that comedy as distinguished from tragedy, in which the remote and the ideal does not hinder and may even help the dramatist's purpose, had lost its touch with life in romantic extravagance. Reaction had already set in against this, as for example in the work of his friend Champion. In his all full and continuity of the story is broken up into more or less elaborate studies in of character or humor, in some respect suggestive and Johnsonian characters. The change is perceptible in Middleton and Marston too, but Johnson, if not the first to express this change, was the first to define it and to supply the appropriate canon thereof. He was the first to propound realism in comedy in critical and well-defined term. As T.S. Eliot, in his critical study of Ben Jonson in the Sacred Wood, observed, the entrance of the depiction and criticism of the actual life of the day and interest essential to vitality in the literature of any age had its chief exponent in Jonson. He was an intimately acquainted with the life of manner of the Londoner of his age, as the author of the Shrewsbury Tales, Lamb, Smollett and Dickens were with those of the Londoners of their respective ages. His comedies brings to the fore all types of people, from noble to beggar and landlord to water carriers. Most of them have for the sense of action or not the romantic forest or Arden, nor the enchanting Iceland of the Tempest, nor the idyllic land of Illyria, but the real London with its panorama of humanity, its brightness and squalor. Ben Jonson cannot be justly dismissed as a grim and pedantic classicist, as to use the word of Tessie, he has also a reused Englishman with a sardonic relish for the varied and colorful London life of his days. Ben Jonson's comedies is also called the comedy of humor, as he analyzed society into humors, and dominant characteristic these humors are type, mentioning throughout the play certain well-defined attributes. This sometimes makes them look satiric, or to use the term put into value by E.M. Forster, flat. But here again, Jonson is no slave of his rules. He makes his types look lively and realistic by strongly individualizing them with certain auxiliary characteristics. T.S. Eliot mentioned that Ben Jonson's comic characterization remains among the greatest achievements of the English drama because of its clearness and certainty, its richness of humor, and its dramatic veracity. Jacobean moralism. Jonson's intention to show the image of times was not an end in itself, but only a means is to his end, which was to reform the society of his age by ridding it to it of all follies and aberration. He frequently announced, "I will strip the rashed foolish of the time, naked as at their birth, and with a whip of steel, print winding glasses in their iron ribs." His whip of steel was his very powerful satire. The element of satire is quite dominant in Ben Jonson's comedies. In fact, he characterized some of his comedies as comic satire. According to him, comedy was expected not to pander to rude and thrill-hungry crowd by transporting them to unrealistic region created by the poet's fancy, but to perform a seriously ethical purpose. It had to mock a baseness and folly in their lesser degrees by sporting with human follies, not with crimes. He tells the universities in the dedication of Volpone that his special aim is to put the snaffle in their mouth that cry out, "We never punish with vice in our interludes." In his preoccupation with ethical consideration, he went so far as to assert the impossibility of any man being the good poet without first being a good man. Again, in the prologue of Every Man Out of His Humor, he proclaims, "I will secure those ups, and to these courteous eyes oppose a mirror, as large as is the stage whereon we act, where they shall see the time's deformity, anatomized in every nerve and sinew, with constant courage and contempt of fear." In Volpone, where the scene is not London but Venice, Johnson satirized greed, lust, cruelty, treachery, and lewdness. In The Alchemist, likewise, the evil of greed and trickery. In The Alchemist, likewise, the evil and the greed, trickery were exposed and satirized in the staple of news. He lesses the crude taste for newsmongering in Bartholomew Fair. Hypocritical Puritan are made the butt of ridicule in The Silent Omen. People with a pathological hatred and anxiety and noise, as exemplified by Morris, are attacked. In Every Man in His Humor, the attack is leveled alike at the boasting but crowdly soldiers, jealous husband, and town and country girls. Thus, in particularly all of his comedies, we met with a satiric and didactic aim. This aim sometimes does violence to the true dramatic art. He was a dramatic artist. His sense of crisp dialogue, his uncanny mastery of situation and suspense, his masculine vigor and anti-sentimentalism, his distrust of tear-jerking devices, his adeptness and plot construction, his keen study of actual men and manner, and above all, his genuine poetic impulse, particularly his lyrical strain, sustain his comedies at a very high artistic level and do not allow them to be boxed down by their pronounced pervasiveness. The School of Bane. Johnson's comedy attracted the attention of a very large number of his contemporaries and excited emulation among the numerous assembly of playwright known as the Son of Bane. Unfortunately, most of them copied their father too slavishly without the equipment of equally excellent dramatic or poetic gifts. Thus, what was true of the followers of Chaucer, the Chaucerian, and those of Shakespeare was also true of Ben Jonson. Sadwell was his very close follower. The work of such dramatists as Sir Robert Howard, brother-in-law of Dryden, and even Sheridan exhibit some influence of the comedy of humor. Even while in the Restoration is a new kind of comedy, the comedy of manner came to be established, Jonson says Alardic Nichols still held his position as chief of comic dramatist. In bracket, Dryden in his essay of dramatic poesy placed his alongside Shakespeare in the latter part of his career. hours David Day say in inverted comma, he was the leader of an important literary group and indeed something of a literary dictator. The first significant example of that species in English literature, inverted comma, closed. It was not for nothing that his epitaph is Westminster Abbey carried the word. Oh, rare Ben Jonson. The topic, Ben Jonson's contribution, over.